Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, whirling around at night.
Well, there goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody. Welcome, everyone, on this Sunday night, November 4th, 2007, to the 245th episode of Dave's Gone By.
Dave, you are so animated this evening.
Well, I'm excited. It's our 245th episode of this show. I mean, that's an achievement.
I thought 244 was good.
244 was good. Who was our guest last week? Was it Jason Graw? Yeah, so Jason is wonderful. A theater guy, a cabaret guy. We have a theater guy.
Oh, no, it was Creskin last week.
Oops, sorry. Okay, last week was Creskin. And the week before was, and Creskin was great, too. And he's kind of a performance guy. So we're staying in the performance field with Gerard Alessandrini, our guest tonight on
spell
the show.
Name.
Well, I have it written down. It's pretty
okay.
Easy. But can you spell the name of his show?
Forbidden Broadway.
W-A-A? Oh, you're hanging. You're hanging until the Y. Forbidden Broadway.
I'm a little tired today.
Yeah. Well, you have that big
party showcase
thing for your... In fact, let's get through the sponsors really quickly because we got to get to the interview. It's going to be great. Forbidden Broadway, folks, if you don't know, it's been around for 25 years. They update it every couple of years, and they make fun of all the big shows.
They
constantly
update it.
Yeah.
They just have a new opening every couple of years.
This is true. It's kind of like Larry King. But, you know, I don't know what that means. So, not even going there. But Forbidden Broadway, I saw it again a couple of weeks ago. It is still brilliant. It's still a wonderful way to start your theater-going season because they make fun in the cleverest, smartest way, using the music of theater, usually, or new and old
rearranging
music.
The lyrics.
And Gerard Alessandrini is the brilliant, brilliant man who created it. He still writes the songs. He directs it. It's quite marvelous stuff. So we're going to be talking to
and
him.
And Dave, one of my friends gave me the box set of the first four CDs
of Forbidden Broadway. From years ago.
It's one of my favorite gifts. Who would have given me that
what
strange
a
gift?
Good gift that was for your 50th birthday last
week. I loved
it. I'm glad. I being the friend who gave it to you, basically because you mentioned on the air
I love
2 weeks earlier that that's what you wanted
you
to
know,
give.
I really did, but I really didn't expect you to do that. I was like joking. I guess a joking going, oh, it would be a great gift. But I really, I love it.
I know. And thank you for doing that. And thank you also for not mentioning a gift that would have been like $100, because thank you. Okay, speaking of money, let's say thank you to our wonderful sponsors, Hewlett, Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway.
Across the street from Lohmann's and right next to the new Lohmann Shoes.
10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Also, more than 10%, lots of percent off for Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. It's the Bible of Broadway, has been for 6 decades, Performing Arts Insider. For more information about it, go to performingartsinsider.com. And Dave's Gone By listeners get more than 10% off. It's like $199 for the year when the normal price is $280. So really, Dave's Gone By listeners, check out that website.
You save almost $90.
Yes. Yeah, you do.
Well, actually,
$81.
Which is close to 90 then.
I hope that's not the math you do for your clients.
I am exhausted today.
Okay. MortgagesRock.com.
They
Mortgages
do,
rock.
They?
They rock. They do because not only can you get mortgage loans and financing for all the projects that you want to do.
You can become a mortgage broker.
Right. You can get your friends and family the loans that they need and get the commission. MortgagesRock.com tells you how. MortgagesRock.com. And finally,
The business that everyone is talking about at the party showcase
is
Fancy Schmancy Balloons.
And your number is?
1-516.
7-9.
I thought that was funny. I thought my number was
1. Oh, I get
516.
I thought you were just doing the area code. I didn't realize. Okay.
No. 516-797-3229.
One more time, please.
516-797-3229.
So if you have a bar mitzvah coming, if you're going to be doing a Thanksgiving party, maybe for an office thing, or
anything
you're planning
coming up,
your Christmas parties and your Hanukkah parties, folks, give Fancy Schmancy Balloons a call, because not only do they do the balloons and the centerpieces for your party, if you need other stuff like flowers and a DJ, Jeff can hook you all up with all those people,
and
too.
And Dave?
Yeah.
We got helium.
Jeff has helium. Yay! And I'm on a helium kind of high, because coming up in just a minute or two, we're going to do Inside Broadway, where we'll be talking about some Broadway news. And also, I was mistaken. We're not going to be doing the Runner Stumbles tonight. We're going to be doing Cyrano and A Bronx Tale, two Broadway shows that opened the last week or so, and I'll be reviewing them in just a moment or so, literally after this commercial. You rock! Yeah! Yeah! You rock! You know what else rocks? Mortgages rock! Yeah, because MortgagesRock.com gives you the chance to help your friends get the loans they need. College loans, home improvement, new trailer. MortgagesRock.com helps you help them. And the more work you do, the more commission you get. Full service, fully licensed, MortgagesRock.com has real experts on the phone, at the website, in the office, making you a bigger, better broker. MortgagesRock.com, we're making money never sounded so good. Rock on, mortgages! Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. MortgagesRock.com. Thank you so much for sponsoring this show. Thank you also, Hewlett Minuteman Press, for sponsoring this show, and to Fancy Schmancy Balloons for sponsoring this show. But most of all, for this segment, Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway, bringing us inside Broadway, because we'll be doing reviews and also theater news. And we're going to flip-flop it this time. Instead of usually starting with the news, we're going to start with reviews, because I saw a couple of Broadway shows that I wanted to get to and tell you about, including a revival on Broadway of Cyrano de Bergerac, starring Kevin Klein, Jennifer Garner, and Daniel Sunjata playing Christian. Well, Cyrano de Bergerac is the kind of play that never really gets old. It's a chestnut in the best sense of the word. It almost, you really have to do it badly and really screw it up to make it bad. Otherwise, it's going to work. It's just a question of how well, or whether some of the slower parts feel kind of dull. And so what we get in this Broadway version, directed by David Laveau, is a wonderful lead performance by Kevin Klein, who really is one of our best stage actors. I was going to say stage actors living, so that doesn't really, not sure that's how I want to put that. But he just makes it seem so effortless with the verse. Now, granted, it's not Shakespearean kind of verse, which is really difficult and arcane, but still, you can tell.
Not iambic pentameter?
I don't know. I mean, there is some rhyming verse, but it doesn't feel like rhyming verse through the whole thing, which makes it really nice. Have you seen it?
It's lyrical verse. I haven't seen this production, but I've seen others.
The production tries to be lyrical, and it has some interesting stage pictures too, although people were raving about the set, and I found it a little austere and a little like, okay, they're throwing up some big long curtains and throw rugs, which is what they would have had back then, but still, I kind of wanted something a little more visual.
As long as they didn't have any track lighting.
It wasn't the 1970s, no.
Wouldn't that be great, though?
No. No, it was not. Well, Steve Martin came close with his version. What was it? What do you call that? Roxanne, he called it. So, Kevin Klein, he's absolutely worth going to see. And
is he worth $110?
Is anything on Broadway? If you have the money, he's worth it. Not that the rest of the show is bad. Jennifer Garner is okay. I mean, she looks gorgeous, and she's not a bad actress, but she's not really, you know, as a lot of critics said, she's very good at the tomboyish stuff, and they're like, I'm taking charge kind of thing, and still finding her way with the other parts of the character.
She's not a girly girl.
And it's also a tough, silly kind of a role, because she's playing a woman who falls in love with just pure, you know, poetic spouting, And that's kind of hard to play. It's a ridiculous sort of a thing. But she does okay. The person I did not like was Daniel Sunjata.
Who was so good in Take Me Out.
He was marvelous in Take Me Out. He played this ball player who's really good looking and sharp, and he comes out, literally, out of the closet in front of the media, and then takes whatever guff or all the stuff that comes with doing that.
And here he's just supposed to be good looking and dumb, and doesn't...
And he's not particularly good looking in this, and I don't know why. He was very good looking in the other play. Here, you're just like, eh. And he's loud. That's his whole thing. He's loud, loud, loud. Really no subtlety. I was really... And if you... It's a triangle play. And if one of the triangle angles is blunt, you're really missing a third of what's happening there. And also the crowd scenes are really messy and jumbly.
Instead, it's like, ping, ping.
Exactly. Exactly. So, even now, I've seen some other Cyranos. I saw Derek Jacobi a few years ago.
That's the best Cyrano.
He was terrific. Well, you know what? Kevin Klein in a somewhat better directed Cyrano might be the best. But because he's not, it's worth seeing for him, but only really for him. Not a bad evening at the theater, really. And if you've never seen Cyrano,
go see it.
Now, something that I enjoy thoroughly from beginning to end, and here there's no angles because it's just one actor. His name is Chaz Palminteri, and he came to the fore about 20 years ago off-Broadway when he did a one-person show called A Bronx Tale, all about his life growing up as a kid in the Bronx among all these Italians and in that milieu, but also the milieu of gangsters.
Nice use of the word milieu.
Thank you, I thought so. But I'll do it like they would say it. I'll do it like a Bronx, like milieu.
A milieu.
Milieu. Yeah, he grew up in a milieu, you know?
Milieu.
Yeah, I got the milieu right here, buddy.
What's wrong with milieu?
So he did this, and it was a big hit show. The critics loved it. Robert De Niro got wind of it. Now producers from all over the woodwork, movie producers wanted to make a movie of it, but they wanted to recast someone else in his role and do it a different way. And De Niro said, No, you did it. It's your story.
De Niro didn't say that. He wouldn't sell it.
Well, he wouldn't
sell it.
Terry
wouldn't sell it. So, until he found someone. And De Niro said, oh, I think you'd be fine with the role.
Well, that's why he sold it to De Niro. And that's why De Niro made the film of it. And since then, Palminteri's had a pretty good career in film and TV and radio. I never saw the original of Bronx Tales, but he's brought it back. Now he's doing it on Broadway, and I think it's a limited run.
At the Booth Theater, right?
Go see it. I don't know. I don't know which theater it is.
Sure,
I don't remember. But, folks, absolutely a must to go see this one-person show, A Bronx Tale, to watch him. His movements are so fluid. And his story, it is a real story with an actual arc, even though it's autobiographical, and I'm sure he exaggerated some things and changed the times on some others, but to tell the story of his relationship with his father, who tried desperately to keep him out of all the bad stuff, and then the surrogate father, this fascinating character, who is a mafioso, who is a mobster of that time, of that milieu, and he's a killer.
Okay, we're a little tired of
nobody's familiar. But the thing is, he also has this really strong moral code, and he tends to be right about so many things. It just happens to be that he carries a gun, he makes his living doing some bad things, and he's killed a few people.
That's like Jack Nicholson in the Scorsese film that he won the...
Oh, I can see, but in other words, it's most of the time, the advice he's giving the kid is good advice.
Right.
So there's this real love and hate relationship with that character, and we're drawn to this kid, and we're drawn to all these people, and to the milieu, and it's 90 minutes, and it goes like that, and it's wonderful to watch him. He plays all the characters. Everybody, could I rave anymore? Could I do any more raving for A Bronx Tale?
Is it worth $110?
If you have the money, absolutely.
I don't think it's $110. I think that's more like an $80
piece. It probably is. Yeah, you have this thing where you judge everything, and it's not a bad thing.
I want to know, is it worth the money to go see?
Yeah, for an average person. The problem is, you don't know the average person's bank account. You know, Donald Trump, is it worth Donald Trump $100? You know, is it worth Donald Trump to get a $100 cup of coffee? You know what I'm saying. Or maybe you don't.
No.
Yes, you do. For Donald Trump, a cup of coffee, it could cost $100. It means nothing to him.
Oh, he actually does, because he's not as rich as he thinks he is.
Oh, all right. Well, someone who is, like Steve Case, or who's the guy who invented not Al Gore who invented
well,
the
Well, obviously not to Britney Spears. Did you see her? Her finances came out the other day. She doesn't give anything to charity.
Well, the only reason so many of them do is for tax write-offs anyway. Yeah, I mean, it's not.
Except for Sting. He's the real thing.
Sting is the real thing. I know. He does all these
okay,
things.
Okay, let's get off that.
Yeah. Let's listen to a quick commercial, and then we're going to do Broadway news, including Wah, an obituary. So we'll be right back after this. There is a season, turn the pages of Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, because this is the season for Broadway. All the big shows are opening in the next few weeks. Learn about them all. For 64 years, Performing Arts Insider has been the Bible of Broadway. Find out why by going to PerformingArtsInsider.com. Subscriptions are 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. So turn to Performing Arts Insider for every show under heaven. And thank you so much to Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine for sponsoring Inside Broadway, which brings us now to Broadway news. Very quickly running through these. Just
what's the news across the White Way, Dave?
Well, today the new Tom Stoppard play opened on Broadway, Rock and Roll. It opened earlier this evening. So everybody look for reviews in tomorrow's papers. Will Tom Stoppard have another hit after his Coast of Utopia?
You know he will.
Last season. It's very possible. I've heard good things about the play.
My view is yes.
Okay, put the candle back. You know what this week is. We've been waiting for it. Everybody's been waiting for it. But this Thursday, November 8th, is when Young Frankenstein opens at the Hilton Theater on Broadway. Roger Bart plays Dr. Frankenstein, bad back and all. We've all been reading about that, how his back rung out. And right in the middle of previews, he had to take a week off. But Andrea Martin is Frau Blücher. Sutton Foster is the delectable Inga. Megan Mullally is Elizabeth. And Igor is played by Christopher Fitzgerald. Is it going to be the next producers, or just a really fun show that people like a lot? I don't think it's going to be a bad show. I don't think anybody's going to hate it. It's just a question, is it going to be great, or is it just going to be okay or good?
And is Gerald going to fit Christopher?
Exactly. Hey, got Grinch?
No.
Well, we do. How the Grinch Stole Christmas returns. It started previews this past Thursday, and it opens Friday, November 9th, at the St. James Theater.
Once again, I say,
did you see it last year?
Yes.
I thought it was nice.
It was okay.
I thought it was really pretty to look at.
It was nice to look at. Certainly not worth the money.
Again, not worth the amount. Well, it's also a 65-minute show. I don't think there's an intermission.
No, nothing. It's a 65-minute show, and they were charging $110.
I know. And they were doing it 12 times a week,
I
too.
I know.
Because they're going to make all this money by the end of January.
And poor John Cullum was working his fingers to the bone as a dog.
He was doing every performance? Or no, they had double cast.
I don't think he was double cast. He, the Grinch, and a couple of them.
Well, maybe not. Well, but anyway, it was a short show.
All those kids were like quadruple cast.
Yeah, well, yeah. But anyway, I thought it was a fun show. It's a cotton candy confection, short and fun, and it reopens this Friday, November 9th.
But buy it at half price, and then you'll enjoy it better.
Yeah. Four more seasons. Happy birthday to Jersey Boys. It opened November 6th.
Oh, that's what I meant to ask you.
Yeah.
In A Bronx Tale, does Joe Pesci show up?
Well, he mentions... Well, no, actually, he mentions in the very beginning, the four seasons, I think he mentions Joe Pesci, because he was also part of that whole scene. I mean, there's some weird noise coming through on the headphones. I don't know what it is.
Like a record skipping.
All our equipment is really, really bad tonight.
Bad equipment. Bad
for you. Not sure if it helps if I take anything down, but I'll try. Anyway, happy birthday, Jersey Boys. They opened November 6, 2005. John Lloyd Young and Christian Hoff are still in it.
No, isn't John Lloyd Young leaving?
Oh, well, maybe he's leaving soon, but he's still there for a little while. Daniel Reichert is leaving on January 6, so they're the main kind of trio. So if you're of an age for that kind of music for the show,
four seasons.
Give it 4 stars. If you like an exciting, well-told musical, I'd say 3.25 stars. And... again, you know, is it worth $100-something? For some people, it really is.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great show. People love it.
Wong.
But still not the hottest ticket on Broadway. Do you know the hottest ticket on Broadway for like the last 3 years has been Wicked?
Wicked. Oh, yeah. Well, I love Wicked. Wicked, I thought, was a brilliant piece of work.
We just celebrated another anniversary. It's only like its 8th year already.
No, not 8.
I know.
4 or 5. But 1 year more. Well, not really. Les Mis is going to close fairly soon. But
they are.
They're celebrating their 1 year anniversary November 9th. They opened November 9th, 2006, but they are definitely, I don't think there's any more extensions happening on January 6th, 2008. So,
really?
A couple, right after the holidays, they're going to close. So if you've never seen Les Mis, absolutely you should. It's a really well-told musical. I think it's this.
I hear bells.
Yeah, I think it might be the tape recorder going. I'm not sure what the heck it is.
It's out in the studio, so don't worry about that.
No, but it might be the wheels on this stupid tape recorder. Anyway.
Our listeners can't hear it. We just hear it. So we're hearing bells now.
If it's not coming through the headphones.
No, it's not.
Oh, good. Okay. Anyway, still waiting on
haunted.
I won't be surprised. Trick or treat, ladies and gentlemen. Still don't know what's happening with the strike that is planned for the stage managers.
Ooh, but on top of everything, we can get a Writers Guild strike, too.
So there's nothing to watch on TV except reality shows, and there's nothing to see in the theater except one or two, non-musicals.
Except big news, The Amazing Race is back.
Yes, The Amazing Race. Yay!
Yay, reality TV.
So that's not affected by the writer's strike out in Hollywood. And then on Broadway, they're really threatening a strike for Thanksgiving weekend beyond if producers and the stage managers don't get together. So we're still waiting on that.
But finally, Frankenstein and the stage managers get together.
Finally, in the news of Broadway, the Broadway news.
The sad news.
The sad news. Goodbye, Gounet. He died, age 73, a bit younger than anybody thought he would go. He was had this weird pulmonary fibrosis. And
he was waiting
a lung transplant. Yeah. I don't know if he smoked. Apparently it was just a rare disease. Doctors were inserting a breathing tube in him. This was just, like a week ago. what he told him?
What?
Just watch my vocal cords. Makes sense. Yeah, that does
sense. Meanwhile, the Sweeney Todd old lady was just going, got along. the beggar woman from Sweeney Todd.
Oh, now. Anyway, Goulet was born in Massachusetts to French-Canadian parents. His main claim to fame when he first started in 1960,
is Camelot.
Camelot with Richard Burton and Julie Andrews. Not a bad team to be paired with. He did Ed Sullivan millions of times.
Ed Sullivan!
TV special. What are you doing? I don't know what the hell you're doing. He won a Grammy in 1962 for one of his record albums. And then in 1968, he won a Tony Award for The Happy Time. And in 1993, he revived Camelot, this time him playing King Arthur rather than Lancelot. And I think the last time Broadway saw him was in 95 as a replacement in La Cage. So he survived by his third wife. Did you know, I had totally forgotten he was married to Carol Lawrence at one point.
Oh, I knew that.
And he wanted to forget that because apparently she wrote a very nasty autobiography about her life, and he didn't come off well in it at all. But well, he was Goulet. He's just one of a kind. You heard terrible things about
him. Oh, low voice.
Well, a good, steady baritone. We'll hear him at the end of the show. We'll play a song of his. But speaking of Forbidden Broadway, since we've got Gerard Alessandrini coming up, we're going to play a Forbidden Broadway bit from about 10 years ago with Brad Oscar playing Robert Goulet when he was bringing Camelot back to Broadway in kind of a bus and truck tour. And this is Forbidden Broadway's way of making fun of both that tour of Camelot, of scrounging for a little bit of extra dollars there, and Robert Goulet.
Carol Lawrence, it's Bob Goulet, your former spouse. To jumpstart my career, but you won't be Queen Guinevere. I had a high school techie paint the scenery, 'cause when it came to cash, we had to scrounge. Now Merlin's Forest looks like Vegas greenery, called the Camelounge. I hired several chorus girls from Caesars, and Arthur's throne is only a shade lounge. I hung some tacky chase lights from the teasers in Camelounge. Camelounge, Camelounge, I know it looks a bit bizarre, but in Camelounge, Camelounge, King Arthur runs a bar. There's fog machines and tinsel in the snow scenes, and when I'm drunk I slur the lyrics round. Now Camelot's forgot, since we threw out the plot, Atlantic City is the look that's known as Camelot. Each evening, as you're drifting off that phantom, before you fall asleep and make weird sounds, think back on all these Cliff Note songs from Bantam. In Camelounge, compared to newer shows, we're not so boring, and if we're not too full of grime and grounge, we might come back to Broadway after touring in Camelounge. Camelounge, Camelounge, Lerner's estate's not overjoyed. I keep myself employed.
Oh, yes, he keeps himself employed.
The stagehand union says we'll have to wrap now. I'll finish up so fast you'll be astounded.
Now, come on,
stars sparkle, Penny. They do sparkle. Because old baritones never die. They just fade away.
Adjust your set. There's a rabbi on it. Me! Every Wednesday morning at 7:30 on Cablevision Channel 20. I'm Rabbi Sol Solomon, spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And my TV show will tell you everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were too staggeringly ignorant to ask. Shalom Dem at 7:30 Wednesday morning on Channel 20 or anytime on YouTube.com. Your prostate will thank you.
Is only okay, and the stars we toast give themselves a roast.
Forbidden Broadway,
where a pretty song doesn't quite belong. That's a lesser lyric risque, and an arty dance doesn't stand a chance.
Forbidden Broadway,
and if you pay close attention to the naughty lyric we spew, you'll find the subjects we mention just might have included the subject of you.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Sunday evening, and it's time for a rude awakening, but one of the very, very best kind, a kind that has entertained New York theatergoers for 25 years. It is the silver anniversary, ladies and gentlemen, of Forbidden Broadway. Now, if you've never seen Forbidden Broadway, what the hell is wrong with you? Folks, this review that pokes fun, that tickles the ribs of every show on Broadway, well, not every show, but most of the shows on Broadway, has been around longer than Spamalot, longer than Broadway Cares benefits that took their cue from what Forbidden Broadway does, which is just make fun in song of shows old and new, the performers, the legends of Broadway, and really, gut them a little bit with a knife, but still with so much love for Broadway and theater that you can't help but walk out of there smiling and humming and just thrilled to be part of the theater community. Now, the person who invented, created, and continues to write and direct Forbidden Broadway is Gerard Alessandrini, and believe it or not, he's in the neighborhood with us tonight. Gerard Alessandrini, welcome to the neighborhood.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here tonight.
All I can say is, first of all, before anything else, thank you so much. I mean, I remember being taken when I was in my teens, must have been in my, maybe early 20s, when it was still at Paulson's.
Yes.
And where you guys started. But why don't you give the basic overview of how the show started with a budget of about $5 and just an idea and a piano.
Right. It's true. You can do a show if you just do it. That's, you've seen it in old Mickey Rooney, Judy Garland movies, and it does happen occasionally. Not often, but 25 years ago, I wanted to showcase myself as a performer and friends of mine that were very talented, and I thought, wouldn't it be fun to take the songs from the actual Broadway shows and write parody lyrics or change the lyrics to actually make fun of them? Of course, you know, writing parody lyrics to existing songs is nothing new. That's probably as old as theater itself.
Sure.
But I guess the little different angle was we were using the songs from Annie, make fun of Annie, or the songs from Fiddle on the Roof to make fun of Fiddle on the Roof. So it was like you were seeing a sort of a skewed version of the real shows. There were plenty of stars then. And, you know, we started it in a supper club with just the costumes from our closet, and we did it, and it pretty quickly caught on, and a lot of celebrities started coming in the press game. And before we know it, we had a little hit show.
A little hit show that ran, and then... How often do you update? Is it every single year or season that you update it, or maybe every 2 years?
Yes, about every year and a half I do a complete updating. In other words, we retitle the show, and I write all new numbers, and mostly new numbers, about 80% new numbers, and sort of give it a different slant or some kind of funny slant. This year, Rude Awakening, of course, that's taking its cue from Spring Awakening, which is a huge critical hit and is just starting to become popular with the public. And, of course, I don't do just Spring Awakening. We do everything, but it's sort of a jump-off point. But even though I update it and do a new edition about every year and a half, I really put new numbers in, every few weeks. We put a new number. As a show will close or a new show will come up, like we already have some new shows coming up this season,
right.
Young Frankenstein, and there's also The Ritz and some other. I'm sure we'll want to parody those shows in the next few weeks or so as people begin to see them.
Are you going to do Putting on the Ritz? Is that going to...
Oh, maybe. Well, that's a song certainly everybody knows from it, but who knows? By the time it opens up, maybe there'll be another standout song, of course.
Hmm.
The score by Mel Brooks, who also wrote The Producer, so there could be some very interesting material in there.
Do you ever feel pressured to come up with a song for a show that has to be covered because it's so major to the season and you're just racking your brains and it's like...
Oh, that's absolutely true. It's hard, you know, sometimes you get a big hit show, and it's not really well-known by the public, and it's hard to, until it becomes the talk of the town, it's hard to find an angle. And then, of course, you just can't take a song from a show or that show. You have to be funny, too. So I have to come up with a funny idea to take on it. And, yeah, sometimes it's very hard. I remember when we were spoofing Chicago, the show which is, you know, the revival has been running over 10 years now. And everybody sort of knew the theater songs. They had been around for generations. But it took me three or four numbers before we settled on one or two that were very funny, you know. And finally I used Give Me Old Razzle Dazzle and changed it to Give Me Old Glossy Fossy about how they sort of stole Bob Fosse's concept in this version. So, and that worked. And, of course, now we spoof all the stars that come in. But sometimes it takes a few go-rounds or... you know, shooting of the arrows before I hit the bullseye.
Do you test the songs? Obviously, on audiences, you slip a new song in every few weeks, too, and then it gets tested before it might go into the next full-season edition.
Yes.
But is there a quality control in between when you've finally written it out and when it goes out there? Are there certain people that you really trust and you go, can you give this a listen?
Well, I trust the performers, and, you know, and I co-direct the show with the very talented Mr. Philip George,
mm-hmm.
and he puts his two cents in. He's wonderful at doing the staging. like when we do the Turntable and the Miz. But, you know, I ask his opinion, and I run it by the cast, and, the barometer is, does it make us laugh? If it just sits there and nobody laughs, then let's not do it. Mm. If it's making us laugh, let's try it. And then the true barometer after we've assembled it is the audience, and they'll tell us, you know. And sometimes we think a song is going to be funny or make a point, and we put it in front of an audience and it lays there like a dead squirrel or something, you know.
Right.
And sometimes the reverse. Sometimes we think we have something decent, and then we put it in the audience howls. We've struck a nerve.
It lies there like the Pirate Queen.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, we can't really spoof flop shows like the Pirate Queen because not a lot of people have seen them. You can mention them. You can maybe throw a little thing in, but we have to spoof shows that everybody has seen. I think that's one of the reasons why Spin Brody has played for so many years, because we're not really, I mean, we're somewhat being inside, but I'm careful about it. I really want to spoof the shows that everybody sees and knows and loves.
Yeah, I was a little surprised in this edition you took on Coast of Utopia, which was a hit, but obviously in a very kind of minor New York way.
Sort of an elite hit. It was a wonderful production. Well, you know, it was around for about 9 months, and of course, if you notice the how much time we spent on it, I only spent like a minute and a half on it.
Right.
You know, which is sort of in relation to where it comes in, is in relation to how many people have seen the show. And of course, I use it, and this is the fun part about Spin Brody, I use it in a Grease number. So, you know, I can mix shows together the way they're not really mixed. Or even Stars, you can, the way I put Ethel Merman with the Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if you're not old enough to have a handle on who Ethel Merman is, you'll certainly get the Phantom of the Opera spoof. And then we try to keep it self-explanatory. But I have to be careful. Sometimes, you know, people haven't seen the shows. Or if a show closes and disappears, it becomes less funny as the weeks go by. So we pull it and we put a new number in of something new. So the show is always changing. And then about a year and a half, we do a complete revamp.
Right.
And that's what we've just done. We have a new version of the show.
Okay, listen to me. No, I mean listen to me on compact disc, where bunches of past episodes of Dave's Gone By are yours to hear over and over again. Comedy sketches like Mel's a Poppin' and Handyman Yoni, visits with guests like Reckless Eric and Julie Haggerty, punchlines and politics in the News Gone By, all just $11 a disc, shipping included. Visit davesgoneby.org or call 516-295-1511 for me on CD. We're talking with Gerard Alessandrini, the creator, the brains and the brawn behind Forbidden Broadway, which, by the way, is playing at the 47th Street Theater, which I think is your third official venue.
Oh, it's our sixth official venue.
Oh, really? Well, there was Paulson's, and then there was...
Well, we've been around a long time. Sometimes we outlast the buildings, you know. we were at Paulson's on 72nd Street, and then we were at Theater East on the east side for a number of years, which I believe is now defunct. And then we were back at Paulson's, but it's not Paulson's now. It's called the Triad.
Oh, that's the Triad. Okay.
It's a lovely cabaret theater. We were there for less than a year. And then we moved to the Stardust Diner.
Right.
Diner, my Boston accent showing, on Broadway and 50th Street. And then they closed that, but our show didn't close. And then we moved to the Douglas Fairbanks Theater on 42nd Street. This is probably too much information for you.
Well,
and they tore that down. So,
man.
So actually that was, we felt bad about that because that was a good home. But it was fortuitous because now the 47th Street Theater is actually the best location and theater we've been in New York, and
that
it's the most enjoyable to see the show.
That was the question I was going to ask you, because of some of the venues that you had been in before were cabaret-ish bar clubs. People could drink, they could have a little nosh while they were... It had more of a cabaret-ish feel. Now you're in a theater-type off-Broadway theater, and I was wondering if you thought the show gained or lost by being in that...
Well, it both lost and gained something. It lost the party feel that it had. You know, we were still doing it in cabaret settings in New York for many years, and yet outside of New York, when we would present it, for example, in Boston, Los Angeles, we would do it in a small theater. But in New York, I tried to keep it a cabaret, sort of, that was part of the concept of the show, that it was underground, that it was slightly naughty, that you could be drunk while you were seeing the show. So it lost that party feel, but what it's gained is you can really see and hear it now very clearly. You can see all the costumes.
It's true.
Hear all the lyrics. Yeah. Usually there's more laughter, you know, there's more of a response from the audience because they're paying closer attention. So that's the upside. And, of course, being the writer, I kind of enjoy that.
You don't have to hear the waitress trying to take a drink order you're doing a song. Absolutely. One of the scenes that you do that I found a little bit surprising in this edition, the Forbidden Broadway Rude Awakening, was about Spamalot. Because, A, it involves the question of already trying to do a spoof of a spoof of a comedy. I mean, it's gone beyond even just spoofing a musical comedy, which you've always been doing. But here is a musical comedy that already is laughing at itself, and you're trying to laugh at it. And I want to ask if that presented a particular problem, and of course you answer that in the song that you do about Spamalot. And then I also wonder what your feelings are about this mega theater joking about itself that's happening more and more in what we call regular theater.
Right. Well, in Spamalot, which I actually enjoyed quite a bit because I love comedy. I love to be made to laugh. There were moments that you thought, well, this is right out of Forbidden Broadway. So we had a comment on that. And it is hard to spoof a spoof. So in a way, I'm lucky that they gave me that ammunition. Of course, when I saw Spamalot, I thought, you know, they stole more from Mel Brooks than they stole from me. They had more elements of the producers in it. But, yes, nowadays the trend is towards what I've been told is called the meta musical, which is a musical that refers to itself as a musical and makes fun of itself or is ironic. And there's a lot of them. There's not only is there Spamalot and the Mel Brooks shows like the producers of Young Frankenstein, but there's the Drowsy Chaperone.
Right.
Does it in a big way.
And off Broadway there was Title of Show. There was a spate of off Broadway.
Oh yeah. Oh, there's so many. Also, I mean, even to an extent, if you saw The Wedding Singer last year, even or Legally Blonde, they do it in part. Or Urinetown did it, like all of
the certainly Urinetown
as a musical will go into a sort of West Side Story type number, and that makes you laugh at West Side Story. So it's been happening a lot in shows. I'm a little disconcerted by it, not because it cuts into my territory, because it actually makes Forbidden Broadway more popular, or more mainstream, but because it's too bad. It's almost like the writers really can't write the real thing sometimes, you know, a real three-dimensional musical with characters that you believe. So it's sort of an easy way out to be self-referential or say, hey, folks, we're doing a musical comedy, yuck, 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 you know.
That's an interesting point. Since you're mentioning all these other musicals, I'm kind of wondering what were some of your favorite musicals of the last 10 years?
Well, it's the last thing is, well, it's surprising. I like, since I do a musical review, I tend to like things that are not what I do. So I like musicals, like I said, where the characters are three-dimensional, that are musical plays. So, I enjoy a lot of the Sondheim shows when they revive.
Well, sure.
You can still take the characters seriously, like Bobby and Company. And I love Ragtime. I've enjoyed some of the Disney ones. I'm not a big fan of them because they can be self-referential, too. I think of all the Disney ones, I enjoyed Beauty and the Beast the most because it was more like a classic musical, and at the time, they made you take it seriously. I very much liked Light in the Piazza. I thought he did that correctly. You see, part of the reason that a musical works is because it's funny when people burst into song. So every time you write a musical, if you want people to take it seriously, you have to figure out a new way for them to burst into song that won't make the audience laugh.
Right.
Basically, that's what they did in Light in the Piazza. It was sort of a subtler new way of getting into the music, in and out of the music. And, of course, it was very much like you took a trip to Italy and went into these characters. So I liked that very much. I liked Spelling Bee, I liked very much. William Finn's show. I thought that was very funny, and I was very much with the characters.
I'll go with you on that. But my other problem, certainly with Light in the Piazza and even with Spelling Bee, is the score didn't really do it for me, as it were. I don't particularly want to listen to the cast albums.
Yeah, there is that element, like, you know, the musicals from the Golden Age, like the Leonard Lowe musicals and the Roger Hamilton musicals, you know, you could extrapolate the songs, but they were musical plays. And it's true, you may not want to sit and listen to those cast albums while you're having dinner or something, but they're really wonderful musical plays, you know?
Mm.
And as a theater experience, even though the music can't be extrapolated like some of the older musicals, they all works into a very charming evening of theater. So you're still moved by them. You may not go out humming 16 bars, but...
Or it doesn't give you the opportunity to take a song like Hello Dolly or whatever it is, Bali High, and then use that melody time after time to do different parodies, because nobody's going to know them.
Not necessarily true. You can do it with songs that are... I mean, songs are... they stick out in a different way nowadays than Hello Dolly, you know, which is very... goes right to the heart. It's sort of very exciting and simplistic, and oh no, simplistic is a word, but you know they're
like before the parade passes by. Also,
right.
I mean a Jerry Herman tune.
There are certainly songs like "Light in the Piazza." The opening number had that idea of her reading from a tour book, and we were able to do that. Or "Les Miserables" is a good example. I mean, in many ways, "Les Miserables" is like an opera. You know.
Right.
It's operical, or... You know.
But that will have a couple of songs. I'm not talking about while the show is still resonant in memory. Yeah. I'm talking about taking a show that has been gone for 10 or 15 years, and then being able to use that number because it has seeped into the consciousness.
All right. Well, once the old musical comedy numbers used to actually go into the cultural subconscious. So, you know, the Sound of Music and Hello Dolly, you know.
You can do that with a couple of, obviously, the Andrew Lloyd Webber sort of songs, and you can do that here and there, maybe with a song from, like, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels or something, but not, I don't know, about some of the other shows that we've been talking about. That's what I'm really getting at.
Well, I just think it's time and repetition that makes the song part of the culture. It's not necessarily whether the song in itself is that. It's, you know, the Disney things like Beauty and the Beast, The Little Mermaid, they're around so much, and... You know, when they first put those movies out, or first put out some of those musicals, they were new music. People didn't necessarily know them right away. It's just that after, you know, 20 years of hearing it. I mean, Sondheim is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people criticized his shows in the 70s for not being melodic because the music wasn't as easily accessible as Jerry Herman because it was denser. And now, you know, you go see Company and you go see Follies and it's loaded.
Right, of course.
Many hit songs in the Jerry Herman show. People know them and they hum along, and it's hard to believe that at one time people thought the music was inaccessible. It just takes time and repetition for that.
That also leads to, I don't know if it's more of a comment or a question, but I do have this feeling also that, conversely to really what I've just been saying over the past 5 minutes, if you were to take the best two or three songs from shows like even Legally Blonde, High Fidelity, Marie Christine, all the Wildhorn shows, and you like gave them to American Idol people to sing. You know, I think A, we might see our newer musicals in a better and a different light, and B, we might have hit songs out of shows. I mean, they're just not getting a chance because the critics are going eh, and the audiences aren't coming.
Right.
And meanwhile, there are songs tucked in there all the way through. What we consider more minor musicals or far from masterpieces. Do you agree with that, or am I just kind of hopefully reaching?
Well, certainly, the musicals that you listed, Legally Blonde, The Wedding Singer, Mary Christine, I mean, they didn't have any songs that leapt out and became popular. I was trying to think what's the last, big song that became popular from a new Broadway show. I mean, the trend nowadays is to do the reverse, take a group of popular songs and make them into a musical.
Well, that was the Wildhorn trend. That was what he tried, and that didn't really work.
If I could think a minute, I could probably give you an example of... I mean, it does happen. It just doesn't happen from those musicals. You know? I'm trying to think if the producer, anything stood out from the producers. Well, actually, it did for Theater People. Or Marvin Hamill's show or something. I don't know. It does happen. It just doesn't happen as much as it used to. I mean, in the 50s and 60s, Broadway shows were designed to be popular music, and popular music was looking for Broadway for these songs. Now that onus isn't on a show anymore, so what's important is it a good piece of musical theater? Is it a good musical play?
Speaking of good musical plays, a lot of the alumnuses,
yes,
I've got to work
alumni
on that, your show, Of Forbidden Broadway, have gone on to some renown in the actual legit world and other places. I can name a few, you can name a few. I mean, a lot of women have actually come out of Fort Burton Broadway and moved forward. Well, not that Fort Burton Broadway is a backward thing, but
right.
Barbara Walsh.
Walsh, who recently did a revival of Company. I mean, Dee Hody has gotten several Tony nominations. She was in Forbidden Broadway. A lot of them are well-known on Broadway, in the Broadway community. In the original cast was Chloe Webb, a good
Chloe
friend of mine.
Webb,
She hasn't done anything really big lately, but she was on the show years ago, China Beach, and she was in Tales of the City, and she made a couple of big movies like Love Affair and Sid and Nancy. So she was fairly well known in the film and television industry. I mean, probably the most famous person that came out of it was Jason Alexander, who, of course, was on Seinfeld. Most of the Broadway shows that are running now feature or star people that have been at Sabine Broadway. For example, Daniel Reichert is starring in Jersey Boys, is one of the Jersey Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in Sabine Broadway. So, you know, I mean, and most of the major talents of Sabine Broadway work all the time in theater, if not in film and television.
Print it, copy it, send it as a gift. All that and more at Hewlett Minuteman Press, your full-service printer, family-owned and operated since 1975. Photocopying, printing, wedding invitations, and grave gifts, Minuteman. 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Call 516-569-5577. 569-5577. On the web at hewlett.minutemanpress.com. And mention Dave's Gone By to get 10% off.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Julie Andrews!
Dead, dead, my upper ring is dead, and when I sing, you won't believe your ears. Sleep, sleep, my technique is asleep, from not doing musicals for years. I couldn't hit the note, I couldn't hit the note, until they dropped the key. Now that I'm 56, my vocal cords play tricks, and when I push, I pee. I'll never know why Frederick Lowe said, Julie, your upper lip is much too tight.
Well, we're talking with Gerard Alessandrini of Forbidden Broadway, the creator, the director, the almost, well, he's co-director, so he's the almost everything behind this wonderful 25-year-old show. If you have another couple of minutes, I do have another couple of questions for you.
Sure.
About really the theme of the current Forbidden Broadway, and we've been circling around it, actually, is you're taking potshots a lot at musicals that are so far out of the old school, mainly because they're filled with pop songs, or that they're revivals, but you've been making fun of that forever. But in this particular case, it really felt again and again, and some of the critics who were a little negative about this edition of Britain Broadway say that you know has affected your ability to be funny because what you're criticizing isn't even worth, on some level, hitting the heights of criticism. Because, I mean, you're criticizing something like Grease or the score of Jersey Boys, which is a bunch of pop songs. Am I getting something with this?
Yeah, I think you are. I mean, it's a good point. I mean, as Broadway changes, so does Forbidden Broadway, because it reflects it. You know, there are a lot of jukebox musicals where we call those jukebox musicals. They're musicals where you take a group of songs that are connected for some reason either from the composer or the star, and then you build a show around them. That would be Jersey Boys, Mamma Mia. Various shows like that. So, and, you know, they tend, as I said, they tend not to be as cohesive as a more well-written piece of musical theater because, you know, they have to move things around. They can't tell the story in a linear way or something.
But well, Jersey Boys is about the book. It's a great book, but...
What, Jersey Boys?
Yeah. It's a really true. I think it's a very
okay. I mean, yeah, I actually had issues with it.
The songs are
enjoyable enough. I had issues because a lot of it is narrated, and to me that wasn't as dramatic as watching the parts where you could watch the scenes played out.
But, you know, as an audience member of Forbidden Broadway Rude Awakening, I know that when I sit there and you make fun of last season's revival of Company, where all the actors were playing their own instruments, or you're making fun of some of the other shows, and you start playing some of the Sondheim or the Jerry Herman music, or even the music from Grey Gardens, and you get a frisson, a little chill, and because as theatergoers, we're connected to this music, we're emotionally, there's something that happens to us when we hear it. And yet, when you start playing or making fun of We Go Together from Greece, or you get the Jersey Boys thing, and the courts start playing for Walk Like a Man, it's not the same. And no offense to you, but it's not the same.
Not because it's lesser music, just because it's not written as theater music. You know, it's written to be played on the radio, which is fine, which is great. But, you know, sitting in a theater watching somebody sing, it takes a particular type of music. And to be really exciting.
Right.
The same way, as we talked about, some theater music does not translate well to a CD or the radio.
Have you ever tried writing pop music or for other
idioms? I'm not in pop. I have some classical training. I mean, I've tried writing theater music. I have some, a lot of original material I have that I pull out once in a while, and I'm working on an original theatrical project now. I wouldn't call it pop music, but it's called theater music. You know, I mean, they both have their... I mean, the problem with using pop music in a show is the music itself is wonderful, very entertaining, very accessible, but does it fit into an evening story? And if you can do it, if you can make it work, like Mamma Mia or Jersey Boys, you can make a lot of money, you know?
Right.
Or you can end up with something like John Lennon, the musical from 2 years ago.
Now, I kind of like that one. See,
that one?
I like more than Mamma Mia, because I like musical more than, well, a lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
No, by the way, I know I sound like such a theater snob. I'm totally into rock and roll and all of that, so I didn't want to give that impression either.
Yeah,
but,
well, rock and roll's great. It's great music. It's just... doesn't always fit into theater. I mean, the Billy Joel show that they did 2 seasons ago, Moving Out, I thought that was a great usage of pop music.
Well, it was a dance musical. It helped, yeah.
Blending dance and the music and being faithful to the music. That was very exciting. That made it work. But it fails a lot. They had that Beach Boy musical.
Oh, God.
You know, you can't always translate it into a theater piece.
Right. Well, Bad Vibrations for that. We remember that. Well, yeah, I am intrigued. You say you're writing a theater piece. Have you written "quote unquote" legitimate musicals? Are they in your drawer, or were they done regionally or something?
I have some that were done regionally, and I have a couple in my drawer and a couple that I'm working on that hopefully I'll have a reading of the next year. I do. Forbidden Broadway is my main income, so I keep working on that. And as I said, you know, we like to keep it fresh. We like to update it, you know, from month to month. So, you know, we're always in there rehearsing new numbers.
Do you
That takes the front burner. But, yes, I have attempted to do the other thing. But if I'm going to do it, I have to do it well, you know.
And the other question that I'm kind of curious about is when you're writing parodies and spoofs, do you ever let your comic instincts go against your real feelings about the show? Like, if you really like a show, but you have to parody it...
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, it's actually easier and more fun to make fun of a show if I like it, because it's more fun to play with the score and to make fun of it. So, for example, I actually really have an admiration and have enjoyed the show Les Miserables, but it's tremendous fun to make fun of.
True.
And sometimes people say, like, oh, I see that you hated Les Mis as much as I do. And I want to say, well, I say to myself, well, no, I actually liked it. You know,
well,
it doesn't mean I'm not going to say something. You can't find something catty to say about it, because that's the fun thing to do.
No, but something like I think the only time that my hackles were raised a little bit in this edition of Forbidden Broadway was for David Hyde Pearson Curtains, and I think you kind of go after him a little bit. And was that a? Now I'm wondering, do you feel that way? Do you feel like he's the bus and truck journeyman? You know, tired businessman star? Or did you just sort of think you just had to make fun of something and he seemed to be the target there?
I think the second. I think, right. I think I may have actually admired him more in the show than we let on in Spin Broadway. But it's sort of fun to look at it in that way, to put that slant on it. Of course, he's kind of doing the same thing himself in the show. We're sort of stealing their comedy. He sort of plays the I really can't sing and dance aspect. And, yeah, it was a quite a star performance, and I was impressed.
Okay.
But it's fun to take the devil's advocate and look the other way and say, like, well, you know, he's a TV star on Broadway. How can we make fun of that?
Mm-hmm. Right. No, because as opposed to, say, what you do with Raul Esparza and company, where you make fun of Raul being very, very intense. And you can say that, and it's still sort of a compliment, even though you're making fun of just that, like, relentless intensity of his.
Right. Well, of course, you know, when I wrote this, by this time, David Hyde Pierce had won the Tony.
Mm.
So you can sort of, you can knock somebody when they're up, you know.
Good
it's
point.
It's easier to do that.
If they asked me, I could write a book. Well, they did ask me, and I did write a book. A collection of my comedies called Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. If you like farce, there's The Triple Wedding. If you like dark comedy, there's Last Respects. If your taste runs to the absurd, Blind Date. Something for everyone in Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. $20 hardcover, $12 soft. Buy it now at 516-295-1511 or through the Dave's Gone By website.
Hi, I'm Gerard Alessandrini, the writer-director of Forbidden Broadway, and you are listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB.
By the way, I never even really got into, as we're closing out this interview with Gerard Alessandrini, how old are you?
I'm 51.
51. So you've got I assume you foresee continuing this for 20, 30-odd more years? The odder the better?
Oh, I don't know. Let's just say season to season, you know.
Really? Okay.
This edition has been very successful, so I'm sure we'll be doing this for about a year and a half, 2 years more. We'll let this edition run its course and add some new things to it. So for the next, for the foreseeable future, we'll keep it going.
Hmm.
But, you know, I enjoy doing it very much as long as it continues to be enjoyable and as long as there's a Broadway and people want to see Forbidden Broadway, we'll do it. But if there comes a time where I feel that I've had enough or there's not as much on Broadway to do, we might let it go. I mean, you know, it's not really one show that's run 25 years. It's really a series of shows. So it is possible we could, you know, not do it for a couple of years and bring it back.
Hmm.
But, you know, right now it's sort of year to year.
Well, I'm hoping it will stay because, to me, this season, certainly, I considered it the beginning of my season going to theater. I mean, I saw a couple of shows over the summer and stuff, but when I sat there for the opening night of Forbidden Broadway Rude Awakening, I just felt, aha, this is where I ought to be. These are my people. This is what we should be doing. We're enjoying ourselves. We're having a wonderful time. We're making fun, but we're also embracing. And I think New York Theater would be a much poorer place without Forbidden Broadway and without you, honestly.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you said that. I really appreciate that, and I feel that, too.
So, I'm glad you feel that, too. That's great.
Yeah, no, I like that Forbidden Broadway is part of the theater community of New York, you know. And most of the stars and people in the shows come to see the show at some point or other.
Well, yeah, Chita Rivera was there on the night that I...
Ashley Brown from Mary Poppins was there.
Who are some of the most famous folks over the years? Who have...
Well, early on, I mean, if you go back, if you know your musical theater history, if you can remember Mary Martin and Ethel Merman,
mm-hmm.
and Carol Channing, they all came to see the show.
Wow.
George Burns, I remember Cher came once, Christopher Reeve when he was still alive, Elizabeth Taylor. Most of the writers come every year, like Stephen Sondheim comes about once every year.
Oh.
Al Prince, Jerry Herman has frequented the show. So a lot of those, and then a lot of the young writers like Jeff Marks and Avenue Q, you know, they come. Marvin Hamlisch, who are some of the stars. Bernadette Peters, Patti LuPone has come frequently. I think Patti LuPone's great. She's one of my favorite talents. But I think I get a feeling she comes not only to laugh but also to check up on what we're saying about her.
Well, I'm sure they all have a little kind of. So do they give you feedback or do they just say wonderful, wonderful, we love it or?
No, most of them give me feedback. Nobody, none of those stars I've ever mentioned have said anything particularly negative. Sometimes they'll say things like, oh, I like the solo numbers a lot, or I like this one was more fun than the last one you did, or, you know, something like that. Sometimes I'll actually get some comments like, oh, you should move this number to the first act and that one to the second.
Hmm.
You know, they're very much entertain a dialogue with us. They'll talk to the actors, you know.
And have you ever had someone who was actually offended by...
You know, nobody has ever said anything to my face or sent me a letter, but I assume we might have offended some people. I mean, people, you know, can be sensitive. But nobody has ever actually said anything to our face. I think that as fun and as naughty as Forbidden Broadway can be, I think we're not as mean as a lot of the critics. So I think if they're in theater and they can take that, they can take Forbidden Broadway. And, of course, like I said, we don't really spoof the flops or the flop stars. We're really spoofing the big icons of theater. So Ralph Esparza came to see the show. So, you know, he noted that he was in the company of all these huge classic stars. So it's actually sort of a compliment.
Good. Good. I mean, that's the spirit of it. Yeah. And that's absolutely that's true. So, again, I hope is that you find the material and the impetus and the energy to keep doing it, not just for another year or another year and a half, but, I don't know, another century of Forbidden Broadway I think would be pretty cool.
Well, you know, theater is endless, and after I'm done with Forbidden Broadway, finished writing Forbidden Broadway, I'm so sure some young person, industrious person, will come up and write something like Forbidden Broadway that does the same thing. And well, I hope they do.
Do you go to the, what do you call it, the Broadway Easter...
The Easter Bonnet competition, right?
Right, and the other one, the...
Yeah, the actors themselves write those numbers, not the writers.
Do you visit? Do you have you ever checked them out?
I do. What they can do that Forbidden Broadway can't do is they can do things on large scale. Like they can get 40 people to do a number, you know, and make fun of a choral piece or put elements together of costumes and actors that we can't do because we have to reduce everything to the miniature version that Forbidden Broadway. It's the four people on the piano,
right,
which in itself is fun. But so it's in some way a different type of satire, which is fine. But I certainly have enjoyed it and laughed at it.
Good. Yeah, and by the way, for people who, we'll tell them one more time that Forbidden Broadway, to laugh at that, and especially at their new edition, Rude Awakening, please go to the 47th Street Theater, very convenient, right in the Times Square area, and you know, all I can say, highly recommend it, and not just because I'm kissing my guest's rear end, Gerard Alessandrini, who I thank so much for being in the neighborhood.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you.
Miss Moreno, her rude gyrations are all lousy imitations. Though we both did West Side Story, hers was like chicken cacciatore. She got all the glory, but don't let that cat in. I'm the fiery Latin. I was the world's first Anita.
We know you were.
Don't mix us up. I am Cheetah. Rita Moreno is not Cheetah. Cheetah is Cheetah and not Rita. I would prefer you forgot Rita. This little beauty reminds you who is the what and the who's who. She gets the movies and bravos. I get the nightclubs and bomb shows. My name is Cheetah and not Rita. Rita is Rita but not Cheetah. Lies are like Cheetah but not Rita. I wouldn't mind if they shot Rita. I'm the one who starred on Broadway from the 50s and the 60s to the current day, people. And I invented the I while Rita was lisping in King and I have done bye-bye birdie, Chicago Bazaar, and I never missed a matinee, people. And when chorus boys scream and yell, ay, 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 how I love all of the gay people. My name is Cheetah and not Rita. Rita is Rita and not Cheetah. Liza hates Rita but not Cheetah. Why won't the union boycott Rita?
Hello, Cheetah.
Rita, what are you doing here?
I'll be doing the movie version of The Rink. I'll probably win another Oscar. You can present it. I'd sooner die. You probably will. I just came by to clarify one thing.
My name is Rita and not Cheetah. Though I look like you, I'm not Cheetah. When people smoke so much pot, Cheetah, they think you're me and I'm not Rita.
I am a versatile actress.
Long as you stay on the mattress.
I can play any role I choose.
Gypsies, Italians, and black Jews.
When I go out on a date, cheetah, people say Vegas the great Rita. But when they feel they say cheetah, looks like you put on some weight, cheetah. If I to set on a great debate, I am the one you should emulate. She is the one who should mind. Rita, Rita, and Chita, and Liza, and Lisa, and Liza, and Chita, and Pia, the Dora, and Lisa, and Mia, and Liza, and Chita, Mia, Liza, Rita, Chita, Rio, Rita, Liza, Pia, Peter, Debbie, Allen, and me.
Do you know how easy and inexpensive it is to advertise on Dave's Gone By? You don't? Well, hey, it's even easier to find out. You can run a 30 or 60 second ad or sponsor a show segment or the whole show. Just go to davesgoneby.org to see the rates. Or call 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511. Bring your message to my audience. Advertise on Dave's Gone By.
Hi, I'm Gerard Alessandrini, the writer-director of Forbidden Broadway, and you are listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB, and you are lucky that you are listening.
Thank you so much to Gerard Alessandrini, our guest tonight, on this Heaven Forbid edition of Dave's Gone By. Thank you to our sponsors, Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway.
MortgagesRack.com, because they do.
Because they rock. Fancy Schmancy Balloons.
Because they are.
Because they'll do your parties and bar mitzvahs and all that you need. And, of course, go check out PerformingArtsInsider.com. And also, if you go through the website, davesgoneby.org, that's where you'll find out the discount you can get when you go to PerformingArtsInsider.com and subscribe to the magazine, The Bible of Broadway. I want to do a couple of quick reminders. Dave's Gone By on TV every Friday morning, 7:30, Channel 20 on Woodbury, Long Island Cable Television. Don't forget also that, let's see, oh yeah, Jeff is pointing to the camera as we speak because we're taping this for Woodbury, Long Island Cable.
But you mean that was just for the TV viewers? You weren't supposed to tell that.
Oh, I see.
Because you couldn't hear me point.
Yeah, that's true. Well, here, this is the sound of Jeff pointing.
Here's the subtlety.
Now, we also have Shalom Dammit, Rabbi Sol Solomon's Peace, Love, and Acid Reflux Hour every Wednesday at 7:30 a.m., 7:30 in the morning on Cable Channel 20. And also, you can see the first five and very soon the first six episodes on YouTube anytime you want to. It's called Shalom Dammit. By all means, catch it on TV Wednesday morning, 7:30, or catch it on YouTube. And remember, you can always listen to a bunch of free Dave's Gone By episodes at theaterpod.com. That's theater with an E-R, theaterpod.com. They're free. You can listen to them anytime. You can scroll back and forth, theaterpod.com. Listen to Filler Up on WGBB. It's a half hour of music chosen by me for you, and it's moving. It was on Thursday nights. It's going to be on now Saturday afternoons at 5:30. Every Saturday afternoon, 5:30, catch Filler Up on AM 1240 WGBB. Well, thank you so much again to Gerard Alessandrini and to my beloved wife, Joyce Weil, whom I love and adore and all that kind of cool stuff. Now,
not to mention.
Yes. And Jeffrey Goodman. Well, yeah, of course. Well, I get to you at the end,
of
course. Over the next week and week after that, our special guest is going to be Athena Reich. She is a singer-songwriter, very interesting performer. Sorry, what was that?
She's going to be on two episodes?
Well, the thing is, I'm going to be away for the next week. So I taped enough material, and also she's got enough musical material for the next couple of weeks. So Athena Reich is going to be our guest next week, November 11th, and again on the 18th for our Thanksgiving episode, with special appearances by the rabbi on that Thanksgiving episode, too. But I'll tell you more about that next Sunday, November 11th, when we'll be here with a 246th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you good night, goulet.
And gone by.
Thank you.
it wouldn't be summer. Seeing you in summer, I never would go. Your hair streaked with sunlight, your lips red as flame, your face with a luster that puts gold to shame. But if I'd ever leave you, how could it be in autumn? How I'd leave in autumn, I never would know. I've seen how you sparkle when fall nips the air. I know you in autumn, and I must be there. And could I leave you running merrily through the snow? Or on a wintry evening when you catch the fire's glow? If ever I would leave you, how could it be in springtime? Knowing how it's spring I'm bewitched by you so. Could I leave?